Welcome to my Bob Thurman podcast. I'm so grateful some good friends enabled me to present them to you. If you enjoy them and find them useful, please think of becoming a member of Tibet House US to help preserve Tibetan culture. Tibet House is the Dalai Lama's cultural center in America. All best wishes. Have a great day.
This is episode 71, titled Illusion-Like Samadhi.
Because I wanted to focus on one last thing, which is this. There's one chapter that called the Goddess chapter, where there's a goddess, Vimalakirti's house is right empty and there are thousands of people, and suddenly a goddess who nobody had seen there before manifests herself. And she starts scattering flowers because all this great Dharma conversation is going on. So she scatters flowers over everybody. Then the flowers fall on their bodies because it's like a rain of flowers. She's a magical goddess. And they fall on the floor and they rose petals. It's all very beautiful. But the monks, they stick on the robes of the monks. So they are covered with flowers. So then Shariputra and the other monks are getting upset and they're shaking their robes because they're not supposed to wear ornaments. And they're having flowers on their robes. What is this? We're not hippies. We're monks. And they're shaking their robes. And so she goes up to Shariputra and says, Shariputra, why are you freaking out and shaking your robe like that? Why are you shaking your robe? He says, well, I can't wear flowers. I'm trying to shake them off. This is very unseemly and unbecoming, inappropriate. And she says, actually, Shariputra, the flowers are very appropriate. You are inappropriate with your dualistic mind. And it goes on and on like that. And there's all this conversation, and it's in the context of a really beautiful dialogue. I don't have time to do it. I have to rush. I'm sorry. There's no time. And, there's this beautiful... Hello? Oh, my machine is stuck now. I don't know. Oh, never mind. There's a great dialogue. Oh, here it goes. You know, what is the great compassion? He goes on and on. And there's a very beautiful dialogue. And by the way, just a footnote. When Sung Jiao and Kumarajiva translated into Chinese, this sutra, when Sung Jiao ran into these small dialogues between Manjushri and Vimalakirti, he completely freaked out. Because in Taoism before that, there's a tradition known in Chinese as Qing Kan, which means something like illuminated conversation, where the Taoist masters would make, like Zhuangzi, Laozi, they would make these kind of cryptic statements back and forth, very profound kind of thing, which was wonderful stuff, really great. And Sung Jiao was very fond of that. But when he read Vimalakirti and Manjushri doing that similar type of thing, so much more deeply he felt the non-duality of emptiness and compassion and so forth. He said that the dialogues of Lao and Zhuang became like dust in front of his eyes, and he became a Mahayana Buddhist, and he translated many texts, starting with the Vimalakirti, very assiduously. Just a side footnote. So he really loved these texts and this dialogue. You know, what is the root of good and evil? Materiality is the root of good and evil. What is the root of materiality? Desire is the root of material. What is the root of desire and attachment? Unreal construction is the root of desire. What is the root of unreal construction? The false concept. What is the root of the false concept? Baselessness. What is the root of baselessness? Manjushri, when something is baseless, how can it have any root? Therefore, all things stand on the root, which is baseless. So that's before that. Then the goddess shows up, and then Shariputra, she scolds Shariputra. Every time Shariputra loses a particular dialogue with the goddess, he changes the subject. So the first time he does, he says, oh, goddess, how long have you been in the house? Because she wasn't visible before. So then she says, well, I've been as long as you, the elder, have been in liberation. How long have you been in nirvana? She says. And then he says, have you been here for quite a while? And she says, have you been in nirvana for quite a while? And then he doesn't speak. But then she doesn't take that as a profound silence. She says, Shariputra, you are the foremost of the wise. Why do you not speak? Now when it is your turn, you do not answer my question. And then he says, since liberation is inexpressible, goddess, I do not know what to say. And then she says, all the syllables pronounced by the elder Shariputra have the nature of liberation, of nirvana. Why? Liberation is neither inside nor outside, nor can it be apprehended apart from inside and outside. Likewise, syllables are neither internal nor external, nor can they be apprehended anywhere else. Therefore, Reverend Shariputra, do not point to liberation by abandoning speech. Why? The holy liberation is the equality of all things. So she challenged, and all my students for 40 years in classes when we read the Vimalakirti Sutra, one of the questions they always face, they have to write essay. What is the difference between Shariputra's silence and Vimalakirti's silence? Because Vimalakirti's silence, everybody gets enlightened. But Shariputra's, the goddess scolds him. And why? Because Shariputra thinks Nirvana is something that he has experienced and other people haven't, so he can't express it to them. So mentally, he is considering them apart from Nirvana. Vimalakirti and non-duality, he is seeing everyone non-dually immersed in the Dharmakaya of the Buddha and totally fine at the cellular level, let's say. Everyone is perfectly happy and healthy at the cellular level, even though they think, I'm so freaked out, this is so terrible, I'm horrible, this is awful. But actually, they're just fine. And because he sees them like that, they feel like that temporarily at that moment in his vision, in his darshana. And their mind opens in a certain way. But they have to answer that to students. They get very confused about it. Anyway, that's the question. Then she challenges Four Noble Truths. She says, don't give me about Four Noble Truths. She says, Four Noble Truths are for proud people who think I got rid of suffering. He says, then again he changes his, and this is what I wanted, I thought you would be amused. He then changes the subject again. He says, gee, you're so smart. How come you're a woman? And she says, what do you mean? What woman? I don't know about being a woman. She says, although I sought my female state for these 12 years, I have not yet found it. Sariputra, if a magician were to incarnate a woman by magic, would you ask her, what prevents you from transforming yourself out of your female state? Sariputra says, no, such a woman would not really exist. So what would there be to transform? She says, just so, Reverend Sariputra, all things do not really exist. Now, would you think, what prevents one whose nature is that of a magical incarnation from transforming herself out of her female state? But this time she presses the point. So she magically switches her consciousness with Shariputra. And he becomes a woman. And she becomes Shariputra. So then she says, Shariputra, how come you're a woman? And he says, I'm not really a woman. How can I be a woman? I'm Shariputra. I mean, he's actually in her body. He feels that he has a female body there. And she says, well, but what do you mean? You're a woman. And he says, no, I'm not really. This is just a trick. It's magic. And she says, and then eventually she switches him back. And she says, that's right. And all beings feel like that. It's just illusory, everything. They never say illusion. It's not absolutely unreal, but it's relatively real. But it's ultimately illusory, like illusion. You know, Maya Upama. Not Maya, but Maya Upama. So I just like that because this is, now I think I have to conclude, right, because my hour is more or less up, and then we have to have questions. But I like that because, why? If non-dual Mahayana enlightenment is what I call the expensive oneness, the Dharmakaya, I think I may have said this to some of you in an earlier talk, I constantly harp on this message. You know, the expensive oneness with the universe is not the cheap one. Cheap one is where you have space like equipoise samadhi when you're looking for yourself, at least in Buddhism. You know, you look for the self. I think in Vedanta too, they're looking for the self and they keep discarding all kind of relational selves, small selves, right? Because they see through them, right? And then they come into a vast space where nobody is there, actually. But it's not nothing, it's a vast space. And even it has a kind of luminosity, and they feel very free. But they don't, it's not like they're in there, there's no body, no skin. It's just mind, and it's a vast, infinite space. And this is called, in Buddhism, space-like equipoised samadhi, where everything disappears, you disappear, but you feel that everything is there in its disappeared form, but it's all one. And people come back from then, they say, wow, I experienced the vast oneness. But, you know, the only one who was experiencing it was them. So it's their vast oneness. So I call that the cheap one. Because nobody else is there. And actually, they're not even there. Just nothing. No one is there, really. But it's not nothing. But no one is there. So I call that cheap. And then, in the Buddhist state, what happens is, the space itself, your prajna paramita, your transcending wisdom, starts to look at your experience of being in space. You don't have a body, you're not thinking in words, but the momentum of that critical wisdom takes the space and dissolves that space. So this being space dissolves under analysis. You know, north, south, west, east, moment of entering, moment of it all dissolves under analysis. So the disappearing state disappears. And when the disappeared state disappears, what is there? Everything that was there before. But then that's experienced as what's called the illusion-like aftermath samadhi, where you see everything like you did, but you realize that in a deeper way, it's disappeared. So it's sort of like a reflection in a mirror. It's a reflection of the moon and water. It's like a magician's trick. It's like magic, like illusion. You follow me? You experience it like that. Which doesn't mean you see it all woo-woo, like you're all stoned or intoxicated. It means it looks just differentiated like it was, but you simultaneously know that it is not the way it seems to be. Do you follow me? Finally, you know that viscerally. Just like, and it's not that impossible, remember, when you look in a mirror, you see something and you do something, you know, look at your face in the mirror or look in the car behind you, and you know it looks like there's something inside there, but you, without thinking, you know it's just a reflection of what's out somewhere else, some other thing. So it's illusion-like. Do you follow me? And your mind easily embraces that while looking at the details of the thing. Do you follow me? So that's what I call the expensive oneness. That's Buddha's oneness. That's how Buddha sees all beings like a mother sees all her children, as beings that he's completely one with, and yet they're still there and they don't think they're one with him, and they're not happy. So he has to be, his compassion makes him enfold himself around them. Now, if that is the definition of enlightenment, my point and why I bring this up in context of the goddess, if that is the definition of enlightenment, enlightenment is not some vast launch, rocket launch out into outer space, like be space, you know, disappear, then you're enlightened because everything disappeared. There are some people who run around saying, oh, I experienced emptiness, so now I'm enlightened. And what they think emptiness is some state of disappearing, because that sounds like emptiness. But actually, they forget that emptiness is also empty. I mean, there is no state of disappeared. It's just the deepest state of all the appeared things. This is Tsongkhapa's great emphasis, but also Chandrakirti, Nagarjuna, all the enlightened beings in Buddhist history, that this world here is emptiness. Its relativity is actually the emptiness. Samsara is nirvana. Nagarjuna said so. Right? So therefore, there's nothing to do, but anybody who doesn't think so, help them find that out. Because when you know that, you really enjoy being here. You don't mind. Right? And if you don't know that, and you think, I'm stuck here and I got to get away, you're going to have a miserable time. Right? Although actually, when you know that it is nirvana, it is like getting away. Because nothing bothers you. Luckily, they say. I don't know for sure, but I'm still hoping. But my point is about the goddess and Sariputra. If that is the case, then the form of the human being that is more deeply aware of the self and other difference being illusory, it will be the female portion of the human beings. Because they have this weird experience, and if they don't personally happen to in a particular lifetime, they have the potential for having it, where they're running around, driving their little car, and doing their thing, and putting on their sari and their clothes, whatever, and then suddenly, they want to have some food, and they're going to have their favorite thing, and then suddenly they hear a little voice inside that says, I don't like that. I don't want to eat like chapati. I want strawberries. And then, oh, strawberries. Oh, I better have some strawberries. In other words, they become two people, at least, if not triplets or quintuplets. Okay? And which male has ever had such an experience? Which one is likely to have it? Never. Of course, every female has had been a male, and every male has been a female, just like she said. But the more empathetic the more naturally, biologically empathetic member of the human species is the female, not the male. The closer, therefore, to enlightenment as defined as compassion and the transcending of the self-other dichotomy is the female, not the male. This is why in Indian history, in many of the ancient monuments, the king is running out doing Ashwamedha and having a big ceremony and how great the king is, king and Shiva and Vishnu and I'm the great king with the Brahmins, isn't that? And then the queen is making donation to the Buddhist monastery. And the queen is building the stupa, and the inscriptions show the queens are creating that. You know, they're way ahead, actually. So, I mean, this is for all of us guys, right? So we learn to listen to the better halves, right? This is, I always like to mention that. That's what the goddess showed. Prajnaparamita, transcendent wisdom, is a female. The Manjushri is also, you know, they're the same, but in a way, but still, she's still a female. Okay, I just wanted to show that. And then there was, wait, one last thing. I know I'm too long. I always go too long. In the end, I just want to say one. Then Vimalakirti, by the way, brings the Abhirati universe and shows the people in this world their Abhirati universe, which is such a hopeful thing. You know, the difference between Abhirati universe and Sukhavati universe is that Abhirati is more humanoid universe. They're also animals. They're dogs and cats and deers and things, but nobody hunts them. But then the ladders from the heavens, you know, Indra's heaven or the other heavens, are always down on earth, so that the gods come down to study with Akshobhya Buddha, who doesn't attain pari, he doesn't dissolve his supreme Nirmanakaya. He's always there. He's always there to teach. And the humans can go up and hang out with the gods if they want and realize that they don't really need to be gods, that gods are not really that happy either. So the unenlightened ones. So that, but otherwise, it's very like the human world. But it's a more elevated level of life. It's like the human world, the Saha world, in a more rational way. Like socialist, not capitalist, you know. Donald Trump is not ruling Abhirati, you know. But George Bush, they're not ruling Abhirati, you know. Some sensible liberal person like Bernie Sanders is ruling, or Hillary Clinton, or Angela Merkel, who's the nicest, or Indira Gandhi, some really nice leader are ruling there, so they don't have political problems like us, and wars and things, you know. So at the end, so he shows the Abhirati. And then at the very end, there's a long thing about anybody who teaches this sutra, anybody who learns one verse, anybody who understands it, it's called the Dharma Puja. And that's the greatest puja. More than filling the universe with stupas and jewels and offerings to Buddhas and whatever, is just learning any sutra, any Mahayana sutra. So there's a big praise of Mahayana sutras. And the final statement then before questions is, India needs... Actually, Sushil Kumar, actually talking with the very wonderful Geshe Ngawang Samdet, former vice chancellor of CUTS, he said he was going to translate all the sutras and shastras too into Hindi. In Patna, he was going to make it a government project, and they would translate it so that India would once again have these Mahayana sutras, along with their Puranas and their whatever. No, they can still have all of that. But then Bhagavad Gita and Bharata, Ramayana, whatever. But they have their sutras back again. And he was going to do that. And he and Geshe Samdet. Then he lost his job, right? But now he's back. So maybe it will happen, you know. But all of you might work on that in the future. It's really very important for India, I think. Really, really important. And it's such that the world understand that these things are not made in China. They're not made... China pretends, Mahayana is China, then we own that. And Japan or whatever, because India lost it. No way. And India is where Mahayana was born, where Vimalakirti was born, the Abhidhamsaka Sutra, Prajnaparamita, etc. This is gift of India to the planet. But India doesn't even know what it is. So this is Tibet House is a great thing. His Holiness Dalai Lama, Tenzin Dedian, they're all doing a great job. And Ajir Vidya. And by the way, Vidya, you made that name. How can you have such a name? Vidya. Mr. Science, that means. Ajir, the unconquerable science. Ajir Vidya. That's a wonderful thing. Okay, thank you very much. That's it.